Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, Olympics are here, fun times are here. Rugby's here, fencing's here. It is time to hoop it up. I mean, I'm having a blast. I've been up for an undisclosed amount of time on this morning recording, and I'm ready to go.
There we go. Recording on a Tuesday morning. We wanted to get some more games in from Monday. Before we get into the basketball, very quickly, outside of basketball, which sports have you been enjoying so far?
You see, Nikias don't listen to me in the intro. No, I named like four sports in the intro, and he just Euro stepped right past them.
No, no,
I've enjoyed all of them. No, all of them, all of the sports. The gold zone has been a gold mine for me because when I don't want to change channels, I don't have to change channels, but I get a little taste of everything. A little field hockey, get a little water polo in there, a little beach volleyball, a little fencing. I love it. Handball. The first day before the open ceremony, I watched like 8 hours of Olympic handball. Like, I am all in. I am all in. Regular volleyball. You put it on the TV. You know what? I get upset in that 4 to 5 hour gap when I realize the Olympics are actually over and I have to wait for the tape delay to come back on. And I wake up early in the morning and I'm like, oh, something's on. And so I just bounce around. I'm just bouncing around all over the place.
There we go.
But shout out to Women's Rugby Sevens. That has been a hoot to watch.
Dog, I tell you what, the truck sticks there are very funny, very cool indeed. I was trying to give you leeway if you want to get into like specific stories or anything that's popped you, any players you want to shout, stuff like that. I did listen to the intro, to be clear.
I don't want to mispronounce anyone's name.
Okay.
So we'll set me up for that next pod so I can practice some pronunciations.
Okay. And I will make sure I have a better lead up for you so you don't accuse me of not listening to what you said 6 seconds ago. All right.
Hey, when Lizzo said truth hurts?
Let's talk about some basketball. We will start on the women's side. Team USA defeating Japan on Monday, a 102-76 victory. Team USA, 35 assists on 42 made shots. I know you like that. They converted two-thirds of their shots inside the arc with 38 of 57. Only shot 20% from three, but it did not matter with that kind of interior dominance. Won the rebounding battle 56-27. And before getting into like player-specific things, I'm going to toss this to you. Not just the volume of offensive rebounds for Team USA in that game. It was 19-9. But the way some of those offensive rebounds looked just got me in that basketball game. It was very apparent that there's just an interior edge here for Team USA.
Are you talking about Brittany Griner and Asia Wilson just putting their hands in the air?
Waving them like they just don't care. It was a very good bit. But in all seriousness, Steve, what were some of your broader takeaways from the opening win for Team USA?
It was a fun game. A little bit disjointed start for Team USA. Japan had the ball pressure going. There were some good denials. They had some drives and some patience. And it was kind of a little touch and go. And then Team USA turned up the defense. And I think they put like a quick 6 points. And then it was just off to the races. And you could see as the game went on, Team USA started to settle in defensively, mixing in coverages. But hey, we feel comfortable with these switches. We feel comfortable containing the penetration. Japan hit a lot of threes, to the point where, they were just firing away from three. If I remember correctly, they were 5 of 14 with 6 minutes left in the second, and they had 24 points at the time. Like their 2-3 ratio was insane in that game. I know you have the stats. But Team USA was able to kind of withhold those punches and kind of continue on their game. I thought the combinations were really fun from Team USA as they're trying to figure things out. Still, to me, anytime that you can just have to deal with Nafisa Collier, Asia Wilson, and Brianna Stewart on defense, it's not ideal. Like, Diana Taurasi is having the time of her life, just being like, yes, please, switch. Yeah, you got that one. And that's with no disrespect. It's like, no, you are a great defender. Let's switch that. I'm good over here. I think it's just going to be interesting to see how does Team USA continue with their combinations, what's going to be situational. I know you really like the lineup of Asia Wilson, Brittany Griner, and Alyssa Thomas in the game at the same time.
Hey, man, I have thoughts. Continue.
So, I mean, you can see different combos, but then we need offense. We need dribble penetration. We need movement. You know, Kelsey Plum gave energy. Jackie Young gave energy. Sabrina Ionescu gave energy. And once they got in transition, you could start to see them really pick things up. So once they got the rhythm, found what they wanted to do defensively, got stops, ran, it just didn't necessarily hit. As far as we can just kind of keep extending this lead, keep extending this lead, and they did what they were supposed to do.
Okay, I got you. Just very quickly on the shot profile note for Japan, 35 shots attempted inside the arc for Japan, 39 shots taken beyond the arc for Japan. So very clearly, like, we are going to have to math this. And in light of, again, Team USA not shooting well from three, like, that was the way for Japan to stay close. Like, it was a lot of pick and roll. Let's drive. We don't have anything. Let's force a late switch. Like, there were a couple where Brittany Griner's defending out on the perimeter. And here's a guard just taking a three. And I was like, well, doesn't seem ideal to be trying to shoot over 6'8 Brittany Griner from out here. But also, like, you kind of have to find your edges where you can. And if math's going to be your way, math's going to be your way. And so kept close until Team USA, to your point, decided we are forcing turnovers. Actually, we're just going to switch a little bit more. We're just going to flatten this all the way out. So now all you are taking are these self-created threes. And once that happened and Team USA was able to force some misses, get some boards and push, you get to see some of these quick seals from the bigs that were switched out on the perimeter. Like, there was a play early in the second quarter where Brittany Griner late switches, contests a three. Team USA gets a board. And guess who's the first player down the court? Guess who already has 2 feet to paint with their hand up? It is Brittany Griner, quick entry pass, layup. And it's like, well, that is the downside to when that does not work. And so, I really appreciated the interior emphasis there for Team USA.
Here's the other part. So, and Asia Wilson was incredible. Brianna Stewart was incredible. But when Asia figured out where the lanes were, there was no answer. And I don't know exactly when it was. Because first half, hey, when she was playing with Brittany Griner, it was like, hey, high low, it's got to be there, we're good. In that second half, catch, hey, I'm gone.
I will see you later.
You can beat me in the paint. There was one drive. She caught from the wing, drove left. Perfect rotation, hands right there to contest. And one contact. The other person's in the stands. I'm like, hey, man. this is a little different as far as just the mindset goes. And the way that Asia and Stewie were playing at that high of a level scoring, that's a lot to deal with. That's a lot to deal with. So, you know, I wanted to make sure I saluted them because there was a point, I think, in the fourth quarter where they had made 20 field goals combined and Japan had only made 18. I think it was like four left in the third quarter or something like that. It was insane what they were doing as a team.
Yeah, 23 and 14 for Asia, 22 and 8 for Brianna Stewart, and both of them were, as you noted, very efficient inside the arc there. I would say, as you were talking about the combinations, and this is something we touched on over the weekend, but the different lineups they can toss out are fun. And, like, the play versatility that they have because of the personnel that they have is also fun. So, like, you know, you watch the NBA, you watch the WNBA, like, everyone's flowing out of horns. Tossed it to the elbow, you have some fun out of that. On any given possession, that is a toss to Brianna Stewart. That is a toss. That is an entry to Nafisa Collier. That is an entry to Asia Wilson. That is an entry to Chelsea Gray. And the amount of variations they have just out of that setup. And just going to a low pick and roll, or it flips to the other side of the floor and they go empty side and they attack. Japan just really couldn't get a beat on them, particularly after like that opening stretch in the first quarter, in the third quarter in particular, like, they just got diced up. Which brings me to Chelsea Gray had 13 assists in this game, one turnover, which actually, before getting into the Chelsea Gray thing, do you like assists being awarded on fouls / made free throws?
I don't mind it. Okay. I don't have a strong opinion on it. Movement is movement. I'm fine with it.
Okay. I like that's a that's an interesting tour. I know a lot of people have talked about wanting to add that on the NBA side. And so, like, this is my first taste of, like, actually paying attention to it. It's like, oh, this is kind of neat. Got to kind of recalibrate, like, what some of the assist totals are as I'm going through different box scores. But, like, okay, I like that you're being awarded for feeding an open player and then getting fouled to stop a basket. That's cool. But I say that to say, Chelsea Gray put together, like, 4 or 5 passes in this game. And it's not like we haven't watched Chelsea Gray make incredible passes before on the W side or even in Olympic play. She just had fun out there. I think she really enjoyed, like, she obviously has the chemistry with Asia Wilson, but I think she really enjoys at any given moment, oh, I could just toss this to Breonna Stewart in her 7-1 wingspan. I could also toss this to Asia in a variety of ways. Hey, BG up there somewhere. I'm not running with Alyssa Thomas. I know she has good hands. And she just got more and more audacious as the game went on with some of these passes. And to the point to where I'm watching her handle the ball either early offense or they're flowing into something. And if I see a player cut through, whether it's a live cut or not, I'm just like, I wonder if she's going to try to fit this into this like 4-inch window. And like half the time she did it. And I'm just like, yo, we are blessed to be able to watch Chelsea Gray play basketball. But more specifically, we are blessed to be able to watch her pass the basketball. It is insane some of the openings that she was able to find on that front. Circling back to your lineup point again, as you brought up, all of the size that Team USA put out there at one time in different occasions of the game, which when you have that kind of talent, you have that kind of lineup versatility, why not? Especially when you can, again, win inside the arc with scoring and also just crush the glass like that. The spacing on some of those lineups kind of had the eye twitching a little bit.
Now, when you say some of those lineups, are you talking about multiple lineups? Are you talking about a singular lineup in particular, Nikias? Hey, could man, you please clarify for the audience?
Listen, we had BG and Alyssa Thomas out there at the same time. Like, Alyssa Thomas in the weak side corner. And I was like, hold on.
Ready to swing the rock. Give it to me. We're going right to a handoff, buddy.
Yeah, just dead corner handoff. Like, okay. Like, I understand, like, conceptually, that's how you would make that work. And again, like, the talent level is insane. So, like, it was still fine. But, you know, process brain for me, it's like, can we maybe not do that with, like, another, like, 4 playing the 3 at the same time? I don't think we have to. I don't think we gotta do that.
Well, can I ask you a question?
Sure, what's up?
What do you like more, the 3 guard lineups from Team USA or the 3 big lineups from Team USA? Because, they trotted both of them out there.
They sure did.
Hey, they played. Let me see in my notes. They had Nafisa, Stewie, and Brittany Griner out there. Stewie, Asia, and Brittany Griner out there. Asia, Alyssa Thomas, and Brittany Griner out there. Stewie, AT, and Griner. Then they just did Stewie and Asia together. Like, it's just very funny combinations that they can kind of throw at you, and then they just invert the offense where it's like, oh, Stewie's just bringing the ball up.
Yeah.
Well, that's neat.
No, I think for me, like, I would rather see very context dependent answer. I guess it depends on like who the bigs are, because if like the bigs are Asia, Stewie, and Fee, to where like Asia's just your 5 at that point, yeah, sign me up for that. You know what I mean? Like, you could just really maximize all the versatility that you have on both ends of the floor. That's cool. If okay, it's true center plus 2 4s, I'm just like, hey, y'all are good enough to do this. We ain't got to do that. So, like, if it's that, give me the 3 guards. Because hey, at that point, they just have, they cover so much ground on the back end, or they just have so much size on the back end around those guards. So, like, if you want to play Sabrina and Kelsey and, like, Jackie together, but, like, one, Kelsey and Jackie in particular have experience like guarding up if they need to. But you have all that shooting, you have the drives, and then behind them, you can put AT and BG back there. You can go AT and Asia if you want. You can go Stewie and BG. You can go Fee. Like, that kind of ground coverage, that kind of instinct on the back line kind of covers for some of the size issues or perimeter, you know, point of attack defense issues you may have with at least, I guess, 2 of the 3. And then on the offensive end, what do you do? Like, have fun defending any of them. So I guess I would lean more of the 3 guard variety than the 3 big variety, just as a concept. But there are 3 front court players that I can vibe with. Again, if it's Stewie, Fee, and Asia, hey, that's neat.
This is very coded for me. I just want you to know that. It's fine. Here's my thing, right? I only ask because I don't envy having to make those choices, because you need to have everyone humming to a degree. And they all have their different strengths. So you have a bunch of guards that can play and help you. And it's trying to find the minutes for a Jewel Lloyd, because you're going to need Jewel Lloyd at some point. Mm-hmm. For Kalia Copper, who can give you the defensive energy and the shot making. For Jackie Young, who's been solid every time we've seen her on the court. Then you have Sabrina and Kelsey Plum, who, you know, are going to be featured important. Sabrina hit like 3 of the 4 threes that Team USA made, and also spammed all the no-look pass animations.
Double tap and circle, buddy. I tell you what, she meant every bit of it.
yeet. Anyways, so it's just, it's intriguing because you know, and they're going to be important as you matriculate through the tournament, but not easy decisions because that's a lot of talent on this roster.
It sure is. It sure is. Just looking at the box score, everyone played at least 10 minutes except Kalia Copper, who left the game early in the second quarter, I believe is what it was, where she took a, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know. I didn't mean to interrupt, but just unlocked it for me. Not the right team to get in foul trouble on. I don't know why this popped in my brain, but the piece of Collier got two fouls, and we didn't see her for like the rest of the first half. I was like, oh.
They know. Guaranteed, they none of y'all fouling out. Tell you what. Also, that just has to be daunting as an opponent. Woo, we did it. Two fouls on BG in the first quarter. Oh, no. It's now Asia Stewie Fee in the front court. Hey, cool. We got a couple of drives to go. And we got Chelsea Gray in foul trouble. Here's Sabrina or Kelsey or Jewel or Jack. It's just like, what exactly do you do when you're facing that kind of talent? I thought you were going to go the other way with the foul trouble. It's like, hey, you get in foul trouble against Team USA, good luck. Because Stewie will draw fouls. Asia will draw fouls. You can't do much with BG. You'll get like the like away from the ball stuff with Diana Taurasi. Chelsea Gray, if she has a smaller guard on her, you have fun. Jackie drives, Kalia Copper drives, Kelsey drives, Jewel drives, can also just stop on the dime and pull up. That seemed like a fun time trying to be physical against Team USA either. So I just had a good time with that. But Ka did leave, I think, we'll say in the first half. I believe it's the second quarter, but we'll say in the first half she did leave, took a fall. I want to say it was the hip, is what it looked like. She did come back in the fourth quarter and immediately got to the basket. So like, I would assume that she's okay. But if we do see any kind of like rotation change or just like minute distribution change on that front, it may just be because of lingering effects from that fall from Kalia Copper. So just keep an eye on that one. As they play again on Thursday, they have Belgium. Any closing thoughts or any questions you have heading into the next one?
Well, for me, I'm intrigued to see how they continue to grow. Probably more so defensively. I think offensively, there's going to be highs and lows as they try and figure out the rhythm and the flow, depending on, especially as opponents do different things. But defensively, okay, do we feel comfortable with our switching? What we do when we're not switching? When we get beat off the bounce, where's our help? What are our rotations? Like just more cleanup stuff, because that's going to be important because you're going to have different matchups. Teams are going to attack the post. Teams are going to drive. It's not going to be as three specific. But I think this is a team that can figure things out on the fly. And they have kind of the depth and the versatility to just make things tough on you. Because it was one of the things that was jarring. It's like, okay, it's not just that they're switching, but it's also, okay, Nafisa Collier is pressuring in the third quarter. Stewie's pressuring in the third quarter. Like, there's just ball pressure and there's not opportunities for you to get in the paint. So that kind of takes away some of the random flow actions. So now our team's going to say, let's throw her in the post. Well, is that the best idea? Is it just going to be pick and roll that gets you? Is that the best idea? So that's kind of where my brain goes.
Okay, makes sense. I think for me, similar to you, like I'm keeping an eye on, again, the switching kind of ramping up in that second half. And I wonder if Team USA settles in on more of that. And, you know, facing Belgium in particular, like what does that look like if you are now, if Julie Van Loo's running the pick and roll with Emma Mieseman, she stretches this out or strings it out, force a late switch, and now it's Emma Mieseman against a smaller player. Team USA, like, does that turn into some of like the early foul trouble stuff? And Team USA had to go deeper into the bag, which deeper into the bag means another all-star, of course. But conceptually, does that mean they have to alter the game plan and stuff like that? Again, a lot of different lineup combinations in this first game. We saw it in the game before the tourney officially started as well. So when does it just become, okay, we're just doing this versus we can throw out 12, 13 different lineups just because we're up by a bunch, et cetera. So like once the rotation tightens a bit and we know who's coming in when, like what is that actually going to be? But those are probably the main two things. Other than that, a dominant performance for Team USA, and they didn't shoot well. If they get the shooting to bounce back in this game against Belgium, could be a lot of fun. So just very quickly on the stat front again, Asia Wilson, 23 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists and 4 blocks. Breonna Stewart with 22 and 8, 3 assists and 3 blocks. Chelsea Gray only 2 points, but 13 assists to 1 turnover. Sabrina Ionescu, Kelsey Plum, and Brittany Griner, each with 11 points apiece off the bench for Team USA. As we go through some of these other box scores from over the weekend and over the past couple of days in general, Germany with an 83-69 victory over Belgium on Monday. France with a 75-54 victory over Canada. Nigeria getting their first Olympic win in 20 years, beating Australia 75-62. Serbia with a 58-55 win over Puerto Rico. And Spain with a 90-89 overtime victory over China on Sunday. Did anything pop? Were you able to catch any or all of those games? Was there any one or anything that stood out to you from those games?
Which question do you want me to answer?
Yes.
Well, let's go, just going in order. Germany, the first quarter that they had, because of Belgium defending Euro champs, and Germany was just like, no, we're going to defend, and we're going to keep defending, and we're going to keep defending. And you look up, and Belgium only has 11 points in the first quarter, and it was like, wow, okay, that's a lot. It was fun, again, to watch Satu back out there. I like the variety of it's free throws, it's threes, and that's what we're doing today. So that was good to see. Never felt like Belgium got in true rhythm, but watching Emma Meesman back out there and reminding myself, oh yeah, if she can just cook and score, and that's what you have to deal with. But it never felt like Belgium was able to find their rhythm on either end of the floor. So it was good to see Germany kind of put that together overall. France, I'm gonna leave that to you, but it's good to see Marine play basketball once again. And once the jumper started going, you start to see the flow going. That was just a fun atmosphere there. The Nigeria Australia game was interesting because Nigeria was like, "Hey, we're here to play," and I got concerned because I was like, "Okay, they're being very patient offensively. They're making Australia work. Do they get tight down the stretch?" And then they didn't at all. And I was very impressed by that performance. They went ahead and took that. Australia, it's interesting to see kind of how they create offense, how the guards kind of are able to open things up, and what does that mean? I didn't know they would like need Lauren Jackson to this degree. Like it's good to see Lauren Jackson in the Olympics still, but I was like, wait, y'all really need like that production to be at a certain level. And then all the free throws they missed, like it worked out, but there was a point where it's like, if they had just made their free throws, they would be winning late in that game. So those are just kind of my overall starting points. Hopefully I hit some. Well, what about you? What you got?
Okay. Also going in order, because you mentioned Germany's defense. And, buddy, Leo Fiebisch on the weak side just wrecked Belgium. just wrecked them. It's like, hey, we're going to switch this. Y'all are flattened out. Actually, we're going to have Nayara Sabli at the level. Y'all think y'all have a pass. Here's just Leo flying in and getting a steal. She had 5 steals in the game. It just had a couple other deflections that weren't steals. It's like, yo, what are you going to get into outside of Emma, please score the basketball in 1-on-1, which she can do, had 25. But the way that they just took Belgium out of their rhythm early on, and I guess just a broader Olympic point that I wanted to make, both on the men's and the women's side, there's so much ball pressure. I don't know if that's just going to be the thing as this continues, but like it was fun for me just watching every inbound, someone just getting picked up 3/4 court. Like you have to work to bring the ball up. A lot of physicality off the ball. So I'm excited to see how that just kind of, is that a sigh? Did I unlock something?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Trying to breathe is early, but
my fault. Hey, just trying to read the cues. I ain't want to talk for 10 minutes straight and you had a point you want to make. Okay, but no, like just watching the early ball pressure for all these games that I was able to catch, it's like, okay, teams are really trying to dictate turns, trying to bleed clock, they want to make you uncomfortable. And so Germany certainly did that. Quick shout out to Alexis Peterson, which I just have an affinity for the ball pressure guards that also just live in the paint.
Is this your second archetype that we've unlocked?
What's the first one?
Oh, it's been established. Wings of a certain size that can maybe dribble.
Oh, I see. You know what? Fair enough. I'll let you have that one. Okay. But anyway, Lexa Peterson, a lot of fun on that one.
She dictated terms. It was like, actually, you know what? Pick and roll, fine, I don't have anything. Bop, bop, I'm in the paint. I'm either scoring or kicking. And then, as you mentioned, the pressure. I think there was one early in the first half, I want to say, second half, she just took the ball on the inbound and got a layup. And I was like, well.
Not what you can do with that. No. So that was there. That was that for that game. It's for France, Canada, the second quarter, in which France outscored Canada 23-2. And as we talk about ball pressure and things, I do want to salute the defense from France. as they did a really good job of just mucking up what Canada was trying to get to, particularly off the ball. And again, they had to early bring up pressure as well to kind of bleed the clock. But Canada just, if we have any college football 25 players out here, you know, you hold the button too long and it's just red, the passage is inaccurate. And even if the person's open, the ball's just going into Rosie or just going to a defender. It was a lot of that in that second quarter. So with the early pressure, they kind of sag off. You try to swing it to the wing, the ball's just going into the third row. It's like, hey, not like this. Like, if you have a bad quarter because you are missing open shots, sure. The amount of turnovers and the amount of dead ball turnovers, which I guess you take that over live ball turnovers, but the amount of turnovers in that second quarter was kind of absurd. France just completely took them out of that one. And I will once again echo, as I did on the last pod, we had our dear pal Mark Schindler on. I just love watching Gabby Williams play basketball. She is so good defensively. Really good passer, really good driver. And generally in international play, she's just more empowered as a scorer. So you get to see more of like the pull-up twos that she kind of complements the drives with. And it's like, you know what? This is neat when she has this kind of freedom, this kind of comfort. And she can just kind of dictate terms on both ends of the floor. 12 points, 8 assists for her. Also had 5 steals, if you want to sprinkle in a number on that. But shout out to France's defense. And you already touched on Bareen. I think 7 points off the bench. But she had some really nice passes in that one. That was, yeah, good morning. But there was a pass from Bareen where she drove left and went like over her head, behind her head, to play a short rolling shot was missed. So it wasn't an assist. But I was like, yeah, that's Bareen. That's what she does. These are the kind of passes she tosses out just because she's bored sometimes. So shout out there. And Ezinne Kalu for Team Nigeria had 17 of, I think, her 19 points in that first half. And she just bombed away. Also, I was a little bit concerned for Nigeria early on. The first minute and 30 seconds was Ezzy Mabagor contest at the basket, outlet, Alana Smith gets a layup, empty side pick and roll, Ezzy scores, another empty side pick and roll, or they're running high pick and roll, Ezzy flashes to the elbow, she drives, and then it's a cut from Jade Melbourne, gets a buck in the 6-0 in the first minute and 30. I was like, oh no. So Australia's going to do the thing, huh? And then Nigeria, to your point, it was like, actually, you're just not doing the scoring thing anymore. We're going to pressure y'all. We're going to make you really uncomfortable on offense. So just watching the tide turn to that degree was pretty fun for me. It's been a cool, I've said fun a lot on this podcast, but I'm really enjoying the defense and just the general pressure and activity so far through the opening, like 2-3 days of a living play.
It's a fun word. What I need from you, the one thing I was waiting for is the Megan Gustafson
Lee listen. Battle of the Titans, dog. It's so, look, matter of fact, we talked, I think Mark brought up Lee, and you and Mark got the dirt out a little bit on Lee Yeroux on the last pod with her play with the Sparks and her getting to evolve her game a little bit with the Sparks. Buddy, and this one, give me the basketball. I am putting you underneath the basket. Here's a jumper. Here's an offensive rebound and a put back. You have fun. And then Megan Gustafson, also give me the basketball, but like a lot more perimeter-based stuff from her, which like you see it kind of sprinkled in with the Aces, but not really, as she's very much just filling a role when she's out there. Like, I am here to catch, screen, or catch handoff and let's go. Nah, with Spain, like, nah, give me the ball out here. I'll just drive into a post-up sometimes, or I'll just drive all the way to the basket, or we can do some of this handoff stuff, but now I'm popping, and now we're playing out of that, depending on what your defense does. Just to read out the stats very quickly on this. Lee Yeroux, 31-15. Megan Gustafson, 29 points, 8 rebounds, 4 steals, and 2 blocks in this basketball game. And boy, did the end of the fourth quarter get funny. I will leave it there for the people that watch the game, you know, but the end of the fourth got funny. I don't even know if that should have got to overtime, but what a game we had. That was some good stuff there. So excited to see how the women's games progress from here. Any closing thoughts or closing shout outs?
Shout out Hanzu, 5 field goal attempts in 12 minutes.
It's what she does. It's what she does. All right, to the men's side, Team USA men defeating Serbia on Sunday, a 110-84 victory. They'll be playing South Sudan on Wednesday. Team USA, 62% on twos, 25 of 37. They converted 56% of their threes and went 18 of 32. Only took 10 free throws, made six of them, but that's what that was there. Steve, any broad takeaways from this Team USA victory?
I mean, the number one is Kevin Durant, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly makes a difference. As soon as he came, because it was an, I don't want to say it was a bad start, but it was an uneven start. The Team USA's defense was pretty solid, but the offense, are we in transition? Are we getting good shots? Couldn't necessarily shake it. Serbia got out to that start. And then KD comes in the game. Well, first, wow. Actually, no, Anthony Davis came in the game. But KD came in, immediate bop. And then it was like, oh, okay, this is different. And I think you can kind of see, I think it was kind of fun to kind of counter the buildup to the Olympics, to the actual Olympics, where it's like, okay, we're getting to the combinations we like, but we're also mixing people together. And so we're getting different looks. We're putting different things out there. You can see how much they value Drew Holiday, obviously, but also how much they value Devin Booker as someone who can defend, move the ball, space, shoot. You know, I think my mind kind of goes to just the sets they can run, where it's like first play of the game. It's just, hey, Joel Embiid's in the corner. Actually, it's just a handoff for Steph Curry. It's a fake. Like, they didn't score off of it, but it's just, it's fun to see that. LeBron, his effort in transition, and then I think just defensively staying solid. But there's a belief with this team. You know, you kind of see as the game went on, they kind of believe in what they do on both ends of the floor. I think the defense not having to rely on activity as much stands out to me compared to other Team USA teams, where it's like we have to force turnovers or we can't defend. They still get in trouble off dribble penetration, but that's been a good part. But overall, it was really fun to see. But KD coming in and changing the game was where I was like, okay, this is a little bit different.
Yeah, it was just nice to see Kevin Durant back out there. And it, naturally, there's another conversation to have based on KD's return. We'll say that for the very end of the Team USA portion. But it was really cool to see Kevin Durant come out there and immediately, to your point, I'm just going to take this three from out here. I see your hand, but I don't really see your hand on this contest. I'm just going to knock this down. And he just kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. It just did not miss until darn near when the game was over. So just that kind of instant impact from KD was neat. I think to your defense point, because I certainly hear you on the not necessarily having to rely on the activity. And I think it's important for them to get to that point. So now it could be more of a mix in when they ramp things up. For me, it felt more like, well, it was starting to feel like their defense is spearheading their offense, but not to the degree where we need to force turnovers and get out in transition because we don't know what a half-court offense is. I do feel like a better balance with this Team USA group. And as you mentioned, some of the half-court stuff they're running early. And just in general, like, there seems to be a little bit more direction on, all right, Steph's got this. LeBron has a matchup. We can give him the ball. Hey, KD's cooking. We can give him the ball. And they could just kind of cycle through a whole lot of different options. And it was hard for Serbia, it felt like, to get a beat on what Team USA even wanted to do as the game went on. And so, like, I feel like if they can maintain that kind of balance, the offense, the half-court offense feels better. The defense, they can kind of mix coverages. And with the combination that they have, they can also mix in that ball pressure with the Drew Holiday or Derek White. They can also just switch a whole bunch of stuff, especially when Embiid's out of the game. And at that point, like, what do you do? Where do you go? And so they can force turnovers or just force you into long and uncomfortable possessions. And then it's early offense time. And from there, you know, even going to the second unit, Ant can attack. Get down here early, generate some catch-and-shoot opportunities. Anthony Davis can dive. Bam can dive. They can both mix into mid-range jumpers as well. With the starting group, you've got to find Steph in transition. LeBron James just – how many celebrations did LeBron James go through in this game against Serbia?
Quite a few. We got the shrug.
The triple
shrug. Can I add a bonus question real quick?
Yeah, what's up?
How many of them did Anthony Edwards also go through? Shout out to Ant. Man is hype.
Anyway, that brother is happy to be there. That brother is happy to be there. So
yeah, bro. Yeah, KD. I think there was one time the TV they called him KD Cole, boy. And I was like, yeah, and he had just, the time of his life.
That brother he's just the steal from Kevin Durant. He's him, he does him, and he chills. You know? That is just the Anthony Edwards experience. But no, like it was just nice to feel like Team USA could just kind of beat you in multiple ways.
I have a question. Can I ask you a process question?
Sure.
How did you feel about Team USA's balance where we can't execute things when we kind of default to pick and roll, but we'll also just get to drive and kick? Did you like the balance? Did it feel stiff to you? How'd you feel about that?
I would say it felt more stiff early on. And like, I wonder how much of this is honestly the guards. Because it felt like Steph was a little uneven in this one. But also like when he hits the shots, you really feel them. So you kind of live with some of that stuff. I was mostly fine with it. Like, I guess for me, I don't mind them leaning too much on the driving kit because of the drivers that they have. I do kind of worry. This is more of a, like a showcase thought than a game again, more than a thought against Serbia specifically. But like, I do wonder once it gets to the driving kick portion of the program, or if they just get late in the clock. It did feel like during the showcase games, it became a little bit of a reliance on LeBron. And I do wonder, like, as we get into game two, game three, game four, game five, like, what does that look like? He's obviously good enough to do that. But if we're just talking process, like, I don't want to feel like they have to just spam, oh, well, this didn't work. Pick and roll, get a ball to LeBron. He's going to do something. Catch it from a standstill 26 feet from the basket. Like, I would like to see them get into stuff a little bit quicker, I guess would probably be my bigger thing. Like, even if it is going to be pick and roll and then flow on the drive and kick, let's just get into it a little bit faster than they did, particularly in that first half and particularly the first half of the first quarter. But as far as the overall balance, like, I'm not super concerned, if that makes sense.
That's fair. It's just something I'm kind of keeping an eye on, especially as they play different teams. You're going to have to deal with different circumstances. Like, South Sudan's going to be a lot different than Serbia as far as, hey, you guys need to keep the ball in front and actually be able to rotate and recover and play in a different way than the half-court offense from Serbia. I think what's interesting to me is the combinations that Team USA can throw out there. Like, you just look up, and it's like a defensive lineup that features Derek White, Kevin Durant, Bam, and LeBron. It's like, wait a minute. And LeBron and KD are on the weak side. Like, they are.
That's a lot of speed and a lot of length.
You know what I mean? Like, they get to do the weak side thing. It's like, hey, this is pretty neat. That's where I have fun. Is there anything that you feel like they're missing defensively? Or do you feel pretty good about it?
Is it that they're missing defensively? Like, I feel like I do wish the overall containment was better. Like, they have the players to kind of compensate for some of this stuff, like, particularly in the front court. Like, if you get beaten now, it's just Anthony Davis or Bam. Like, how worried are you really? Type B. But I do wish, like, the initial containment was a little bit better. And this is where, again, Derek White is just needed on this team to a degree that I don't think was anticipated when he joined the roster. Obviously, you have Drew in there. I'm glad you shout out Devin Booker early because he has been working his tail off defensively throughout this entire run. So I do want to salute him there. You know him for the bucket getting, and he scored in this one, but he's really fighting on defense. But I guess I wish I felt a little bit better about that so they wouldn't have to be in rotation as much.
I think it's interesting that the play of Drew has been what it's been, but it's also like, well, we also have Derek White. So we're going to have one of those on the court at all times. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, okay. We've kind of got a template here. We can play two bigs. We haven't, like, think about the small lineup combinations they can go to, and we haven't had to think about it really. But they've just kind of tapped into it maybe for a little bit. But there's a lot of potential there for being able to play KD and LeBron. Like, it's interesting to see what they're kind of get to. It was very funny to watch Jokic versus Anthony Davis and Bam.
I was about to shift to Jokic, his buddy.
And just thinking about kind of like, it's a different context. So a little bit different usage-wise, but also there were times where it's like, hey, nice to see you. Old friend.
Bop, bop, bop. There was one against Anthony Davis. I can't remember if it was an and one or not, but it was one of those, like, I get the ball in the post, I'm on the left block, hit you twice, I spin, I'm underneath the basket, I'm just going to use my back to create space. And there's a layup, and it's like, oh, yeah, he has just kind of done this the last couple of postseasons, huh? This is kind of rude. And then there's Bam, like, he's fronting sometimes, and then you got to flip back. It's like, hey, great defense from Bam. Oh, wait, Jokic is 2.5 feet from the basket now. He did all that work early, and Jokic is just bigger and stronger than him, which is just unfortunate. And again, doesn't say anything bad about Bam. It's just like, this is the kind of monster that you're dealing with. In a game that Team USA won by 26 points, Serbia played Team USA even with Jokic on the floor. And this is without, like, Bogdan. He had 14. We didn't have, like, the big Bogdan game. They didn't have the big guard game, which I really feel like that was just the difference in this one. But the fact that they didn't have the elite guard play in this one, and again, it was even with Jokic on the floor, is terrifying. And also just really impressive. Nikola Jokic is very good. That first half from Jokic, to where one, he was just looking to score. So that was fun. But on top of that, that's where you kind of saw Team USA, at least early on, trying to cycle through. Okay, what exactly do we want to do coverage wise? We're going to stick with a drop. And Jokic is going to pop. Do we want to give him the shot? Okay, not really. It's a late switch. And now it's, wait a minute, it's that Steph Curry on Nikola Jokic? Oh, no. Steph's reaction to the rip through from Jokic was very funny. I got a really good laugh out of that one. I think I tweeted at the time, Steph isn't having fun on defense, huh? Because I feel like Steph was equal parts y'all calling that. And the other part was like, what am I supposed to do with that? Why am I even having to switch on to this man? What is this? If y'all don't let him shoot the three, send the rotation from the third guy. Why am I here? I was like, oh, no. I don't know what you're supposed to do with that part. But no, Jokic was incredible. 20 points, 5 boards, 8 assists, 4 steals in the game for Nikola Jokic. I just wanted to sprinkle that one in. You could think.
Well, I was going to say, Serbia shot 9 of 37 from 3 in a game where Team USA shot 18 of 32 from 3. So it's like, math. Okay, is that also? Oh, man. All right.
Got him, coach.
Shouldn't have done that. All right, let me pivot to the big rotation. Like, being able to have Embiid, AD, and Bam is just kind of a luxury for Team USA and the bigs, where before it was like, well, let's hope we can find a small ball big. You know what I mean? Like, I think people forget that. You got to contrast like this Olympic team to the previous Olympic team, where we're kind of hoping we have a five, and now we got like 3 legit ones.
Yeah, like it's Joel Embiid play, I think 11 minutes in this game. So like, that's the thing. Like, you can't really, like, ideally, obviously, but in an ideal world, like, you can't really win with that front court group. You know what I mean? Hey, we're having fun against Joel Embiid, or we got him in foul trouble. In comes Anthony Davis and or Bam Adebayo, who are smaller, but are also very good. It's like, oh, yeah, if you force Team USA to play smaller, are you really forcing them into an adjustment that they don't like? Like, it didn't seem like the answer is no. At least not right now. Obviously, things can change within this game, etc. But, like, conceptually, that doesn't feel like a major loss for them. Like, that's the luxury of the talent that they have in the front court.
Well, it's actually interesting, leading into their next game, where, if we recall correctly, South Sudan had some fun against Team USA. Team USA pulled it out.
A whole lot of shots,
whole lot of drives, whole lot of hey man. Do we see Team USA with more of the wing oriented lineup? Do we see more switching? Do we see more work to contain? Like, that's going to be interesting to see how they adjust to that battle. So I assume they will be a little bit more prepared for the challenge that they face.
Yeah, we got some late LeBron heroics in that game as well. Well, speaking of cycling through combinations, Steve, would you like to be annoyed for like 5 minutes?
Yeah, man, that's fine. What you got?
All right, let's go ahead and knock this out. So as we talk about the rotation and different lineup combinations, two players that we did not see in that game, Tyrese Halliburton, who his minutes had just kind of dipped from the showcase to now, and Jason Tatum, who did not log a minute in this game. Were you surprised?
No. The only reason I say no is because, one, and the reason, here's why I'll say no. Once I saw Derek White was one of the first 2 to 3 people off the bench, that piqued my eyebrow, right? And I'm just thinking math-wise. If KD's not starting, that takes up room. Because you look at the lineup. Embiid's going to play, LeBron's going to play, Steph's going to play. Drew's going to be very important, so he's in there. If Devin Booker's starting, that's 5. KD's 6. You know Bam and AD are going to play. That's 8. Anthony Edwards is going to play. That's 9. Once I saw Derek White, that's 10. All right, how are we getting to 11? When are we getting to 11? I don't think we're getting to 11. That's the matchup. KD cooked. KD played very, very well. So Anthony Edwards played well. Where are the minutes going to come from? Devin and you got to think about it. KD played well. He only played 17 minutes. It's only a 40-minute game. Bam played 20. Ant played 19. Derek White and Holiday combined for literally 40. Steph only played 20. Where are the minutes coming from? I mean, you could argue and say Devin Booker, but Devin Booker's 4 or 5 from 3. So why am I taking him off the court? Ant's driving and shooting the ball well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think game scenario, game flow just kind of dictated that maybe the opportunity for Tatum to play wasn't there, or the matchup dictated, hey, we want Derek White out there. We need to keep Biggs out there. I just think this is the difference with this kind of talent. When you have a really, really good team, not everyone's going to get all the minutes they should or play. It doesn't mean they're not going to play ever. Because if we recall correctly, guess who was one of the highest minute getters of the last Olympic team? Jason Tatum. Hey, guess what the difference is this Olympic team? LeBron James is here. LeBron James is clocked into work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If me and you do a pod, we got a lot of wiggle room. Mm-hmm. If we invite guests of this caliber, guess who's not talking as much? Me and you.
Correct.
And just how it works. All right. Go back to when we had the great Doris Burke on. I didn't say that much. I was here to listen.
I just asked a bunch of questions. So even when I did talk, it was more setting up her and you. So like to your point, like that's just kind of how it flows sometimes.
Another thing, he said, A, I talked to Jason Tatum. B, he's going to play on Wednesday. Why are we, and he explained why he didn't play in this game. Why is this a thing? Why are we doing discourse? Why are we yapping all the time? Why does everyone want to yap so much? We don't have to yap this much. It's okay. It just says nothing about Jason Tatum's talent. It's okay. It is okay. Like, come on. This is how basketball works. They're going to need him. They're going to need everyone on this team. Joel Embiid only played 11 minutes. Wasn't his best run. And y'all been destroying that man ever since he joined the team. They're going to need him at some point, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, very overqualified for this. So I'll say it up top. But, like, they needed him for this specific matchup to start. It's like you need size against Nikola Jokic. Like, I think to the Tatum thing, to answer my own question, was I surprised he didn't play? Yes, I was surprised that he didn't play. Do I understand why he didn't, as you just eloquently went through the game flow and the lineups and things? Absolutely. Which is why I ultimately land on, like, that was weird. I get it. I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing. So I'm not up in arms about it. I'm also not a Celtics fan. So, like, I don't have the emotional attachment there either. But, like, yeah, I was surprised. I figured they would still be able to, if nothing else, like, he gets, like, some late second quarter. He get, like, second quarter and fourth quarter minutes, especially as the game got out of hand. I figured it would have been that. But also, like, as I, you know, talking to you and just generally just watching more basketball the past few years, you get to learn more about, like, how the, not politics, but, like, how some of this stuff kind of works. Into where, like, a player of Tatum's caliber, like, he would probably rather not play than play, like, the last 3 minutes of a blowout.
Oh, yeah. Look, here's the other thing. It's much better for Steve Kerr that he didn't put Tatum in late and just let it rock. Mm-hmm. To your point. Like, you can't. That would be worse. Like, the conversation would be different because Jason Tatum would have played. But, like, no, don't put him out there. It's cold all game. Let him rock. Talk about it afterwards. It is what it is. Continue. Sorry.
Okay. No, I got you. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that factors into me now. Like, if this exact same thing happened at the last Olympics, I probably have a stronger reaction to it. It's like, hey, what the heck? He's really good. I understand this is talent, but Jason Tatum's really good. He's versatile, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. With all of that, just like...
So we would have had a better pod episode.
No! That's crazy. So,
sorry, public, but look at my impact. Look at me go.
It's almost like I listen to you. That's crazy. But no, but that's where I land on, like, I was surprised. It felt a little odd, but, like, I also got it. And I think to circle back to a lot of things that we've said, like, you've talked, as you briefly alluded to, like, the reaction that Joel Embiid has gotten from, like, the Team USA fan base, et cetera. I think part of, like, Embiid's inclusion also dictates a little bit of this. Again, I feel like they needed him for this matchup. And once they face more size, they're going to need him. Because as you pointed out earlier, like, we've seen Jokic versus AD and we've seen Jokic versus Bam. And those are two of the best defenders in the world. And we see what Jokic can do to either one of them. And so just by virtue of having bigger Joel Embiid, who is also a darn good defender in his own right, you hope, okay, Embiid can score on one end. He can also hold up a little bit better against some of these Joel Embiid post-ups. I mean, against these Nikola Jokic post-ups. And then once we transition to AD plus Bam or just AD or Bam, it comes with a little bit more punch. Either Jokic is tired out or it's now those two against Serbia's backup bigs. Mm-hmm. And you can just kind of have fun with that. Like, I think if Embiid wasn't there and you're just starting Anthony Davis and Bam's just your primary backup five, you now have more minutes at the four available. So even if you have KD cooking, et cetera, Jason Tatum's probably just your backup four at that point. And we're not even having this discussion.
Also, and if Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo weren't playing this well together,
yeah, that's
you have more wiggle room for Tatum. Like, it's just, it's I think a lot of things went right for Team USA in a way that they didn't need Tatum. That doesn't mean they don't need Tatum for the tournament, because you're going to have a foul trouble game. You're going to have a switching game. Like, there's going to be different things that pop up. And I want people to think about this for a second, right? I'm going to the Steve Kerr quote. The hardest part of this job is you're sitting at least a couple of guys who are world-class, some of the very best players on earth. Think about that. Just let that soak in for a second. This is not a regular NBA rotation where I can look at my ninth person and be like, I'm not playing you tonight. And it's okay, because you're the ninth best player on our team. We have our hierarchy. We're doing this. Tyrese Halliburton and Jason Tatum, off incredible seasons, are just odd people out, because we have such a good team that we're in this position. We didn't have this discussion last Olympics. And this is no disrespect to the players that played and did what they did and helped Team USA win gold, but they were probably easier conversations to have, that, hey, you're not playing this game. Insert wing or big here. If you want to look up the roster, I will not disrespect their names, but a little bit easier to have those conversations in that Olympic than in this one. And it's just, it's one of those things. As a coach, you have to make these kind of decisions. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. I am sure that coach's meeting was not fun, trying to figure out, all right, what do we do? Mm-hmm. Who do we squeeze? And there's going to be a squeeze, especially if players play well. Like, I think if Book didn't play at that level, might be more room for Tatum. If KD didn't play at that level, might be more room for Tatum. But it's cool. And also, don't do the – stop with the clip thing. Like, stop the – oh, Jason Tatum was mad on the bench. KD was cooking and Jason Tatum was up clapping. Like, don't do that to people. don't do that to people. Oh, he's mad. Dog, as someone who spent a lot of time on the bench, it's very easy to just – you can be upset, but you can also be hyped for your teammates. Yeah. It's just a different flow. It's a different mindset, different way of watching the game. Like, don't – just stop looking for things that aren't there.
Also, if I can briefly tap in, it's like, as someone with ADD, sometimes you just zone out sometimes. Like, there was one specific clip. Saw Jason Tatum staring out. Like, he could have just been watching the game intently, or he could have just been thinking about something else as he knew he wasn't getting in. And it could have just been that. Like, I would not be surprised if Tatum was upset, because he is a champion, all NBA caliber player, et cetera, and he wants to play because he's competitive and good. So, like, if he was upset, that's also natural and fine. And sometimes humans are upset with their situations. That doesn't mean, well, Tatum's not playing in 2028. It's cooked.
Oh, please don't do that. Hey, like, man.
He could just be naturally upset. And as Steve Kerr said, like, they talked before the game. That was probably an easier conversation. Like, okay, well, I probably ain't going to play that much, or I might not play. And you kind of prep yourself for that. And then you see KD make his first seven shots. It's like, oh, snap, I'm really just not playing. You know what I mean? And so that could just be like a quick adjustment. As a human being that has to react to situations in real time, it could just be that. And it's fine. And broader point that I want to make is, like, this situation, as just a confluence of factors that kind of flowed into this, this is precisely why you don't build the Team USA roster with just the 12 best players available. This is precisely why you have role guys that can fit in and also are okay with not playing if they're not of the upper echelon. Just so...
Are you saying we should have less talent? It's early, so let me absorb this in my brain. Continue.
No, I'm saying, like, think about the... Let's say, think about, like, the 2004 Olympic team that very much did not win the gold medal. Mm-hmm. Whole lot of talent, maybe not the best fit, whole lot of personalities, et cetera. I don't think Steve Kerr went to this tournament saying, hey, we're just not going to play Jason Tatum at all, to your point. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's just going to play a bunch of minutes this game. But, like, Jason Tatum, I don't know him personally, so I don't want to put too much dip on the chill. But, like, he also seems like the kind of person that could take something like that in stride and not affect, you know, the game on Wednesday that I'm sure he's just going to play in, and we don't have to talk about this anymore. Or, like, looking further out to where, like, he's going to take this as some big red mark, and now he just no longer wants to be involved with Olympic basketball anymore. Like, I think part of having Jason Tatum on your team is, one, because he's so good, but two, because he can fit a multitude of roles. Like, he's a number one option for Boston. He could be a number one option for Team USA. He could be a number three option for Team USA. He could be a number four option for Team USA. He can come off the bench for Team USA. We had this game, and I think he's ultimately going to be fine. Like, he has that kind of versatility and ultimately that kind of, like, personality to him to where he will put the team first and be okay. You know what I mean? Like, I think, I'm trying to think of a good example off the fly. Like, I think you can list two basketball players that may just be, like, better at basketball than, like, Drew and Derrick White. But, like, one, they fill very specific roles. And two, if it does come to a point to where actually we're ramping up the Devin Booker minutes, we're ramping up the Jason Tatum minutes, and Drew and or Derrick White either play less or don't play at all, do you think either of them are going to be very upset or check out? No, because they're that kind of those kind of players, but ultimately there's those kind of people as well. And so, like, just the general fit, I think, overall matters. Like, I probably stumbled through that, but that's what I was trying to get to. Not necessarily Team USA needs bad players or anything like that.
Okay, well, that makes sense. But, hey, man, plenty of times where Carmelo didn't play 20 minutes in a game. It'd be like that sometimes. It happens. Here's my other thing. If I can just kind of take it away from the seriousness of this discussion, I did not know we'd be having for this amount of time. One, y'all wanted this. You wanted Team USA to put together the kind of team that would go ahead and do work overseas. To do that, you need to have great talent. Not everyone can play when that happens. It's okay. Number two, had Jason Tatum played, and that second unit was Kevin Durant, Anthony Edwards, Jason Tatum, Bam Adebayo, and Anthony Davis, someone would have done the who's the point guard thing, and because y'all yap and complain all the time, and then... You would have been upset either way. So I don't want to hear it, all right? If this doesn't apply to you, it doesn't apply to you. But if it does, I know you're mad in your car right now. Be upset.
Put a little bit more on the gym list, no champ. You doing an extra set right now? Steve, talk about me. But yeah, like, again, like, it was a surprise to me. I don't expect this to continue. And thus, like, I don't think it's going to be a big deal at the end of the day. And, like, this is probably the best Team USA has looked throughout this entire circuit on top of that. So, like, even to criticizing, like, Steve Kerr, which, again, I said at the top, I felt like it was odd. I was surprised that he didn't play. Even though we just talked about all of this, it is understandable once you lay it out. I was still surprised. You can't even hit Kerr with the "it ain't work." You can't even press that button. You know what I mean? Like, normally, as, you know, taking it to the NBA side, Steve Kerr may do a rotation thing. You know, look up that rotation in the game 7 in 2016, etc. Like, Steve Kerr will do a rotation thing, and then it doesn't work, and it's like he went galaxy brain, etc., and it also didn't work. Or they won, but it was closer for comfort because he did this specific thing, right? What can you point to in this game to where it didn't... What's the thing? Like, looking at plus minus, the only player that Team USA lost their minutes with was with Joel Embiid. And lo and behold, outside of the two players that didn't play, he had the lowest minute load of everyone on the roster. So, like, Steve Kerr very clearly saw, okay, well, I guess we can go smaller. And that was it. And we also just, like, also said earlier, like, you want Embiid for the size against Jokic. And Jokic was good. He ate those minutes, and they still won by 26. Like, what are we? That's not for me. That's not me saying that Steve Kerr is infallible or anything like that. But, like, We could turn the volume down from 10 to 7.
It's okay. Hey, have your opinions, have your thoughts. We just got to, let's just have a little bit more fun. Also, like, if I was petty Steve Kerr, I would have just been like, Devin Booker was 4 of 6. Kevin Durant was 8 of 9. Anthony Edwards was 4 of 6. Who did you want me to take off the court?
And again, so that tweeted out. Someone asked me about the rotation. I was like, I don't think they anticipated needing Derrick White.
Do you think they didn't anticipate needing Garrett White or Derrick White being this good?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think you bring him in because he can be the connector for you, and ultimately the defense is really good. But as you talked about, you know, going back to the South Sudan game in particular, where, like, they really needed that defense because they just could not contain the ball like that, et cetera. And so, again, I think when you have Embiid, like, you can still switch 1 through 4. It's not impossible to switch. And it's not even impossible to switch Embiid. But, like, you're not going to be a switch-everything group with Joel Embiid, like, 95% of the time. So you need the screen navigation. And again, going back to the earlier point about just a whole bunch of ball pressure and early pickup points in Olympic play so far, you want Derrick White and Drew Holiday to be able to do stuff like that. So that's where I'm like, Derrick White has been very good, and he's earned the minutes he's gotten and the closing minutes that he's gotten. But I think because the containment isn't quite where Team USA wanted it to be, they also need him as, like, one of the A-plus perimeter defenders on the roster. And so the fact that he is now just kind of not baked in, but like, you know, he's getting 12, 15 minutes, 12, 15, 17, 20 minutes versus, hey, you're just, you know, he was the Kawhi replacement. Like, ideally, I think it's Derek White and probably Halliburton. It's probably the two guys that don't get minutes. And then everything else is just kind of solid. But because they need the defense so much, Derek White is now just in the rotation. And if you have any concerns about, hey, this is feeling my turn, your turn, this is a lot of LeBron, this is a lot of, you know, KD just came back, et cetera, guess who's going to screen and cut and move the ball when it's swung to him? Derek White. So that's where I make the point. Like, I don't think they anticipated needing him to this degree. It felt heading in like he was going to be more spark plug adjacent. Hey, we're getting torched in this first quarter. Let's bring him in for a spell. He helps turn it, and then we'll go back to our regular rotation. Derek White just seems to be in now. So, I don't know. That's what I had on that front. A lot of rotation talk, but we hashtag did it. Did you have any closing thoughts or questions for Team USA?
No, we're good. They do need to clean it up defensively as far as keeping the ball in front and rotating out of it, but we'll see that kind of as the tournament advances.
That we shall. Other Olympic scores on the men's side. Now, similar to the women's side, I'll lay it out, and if any game pop for you, any player pop for you, you can give your thoughts there.
Go ahead. Before you go, Canada has defeated Australia, by the way.
Ah, there we go. That's the game started, what, 7:30 Eastern, I want to say? Yes,
Canada's 2-0. They won 93-83. RJ Barrett with 24-7-5. Shea goes out there with 16 points on 8 of 10 from the field.
That seems good.
So, continue. Also, Jock Landale continuing his run.
Continue to cook. How about that? Wait, so you said 16 points on 8 of 10 shooting for Shea?
Yep.
So he scored efficiently without taking 15 free throws, huh? Because I thought that the only... Anyway. All right. Steve has taken off the headphones. I had to be petty. Hey, put some respect on Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's name. Anyway, rolling through some of these other box scores. Spain defeating Greece 84-77. Santi Aldama with 19-12. Giannis with 27-11. Greece 0-2 right now. Spain getting their first win of group play. Australia defeating Spain on Saturday, 92-80. As Steve mentioned, Jock Landale continued to run in that game on Saturday. 20 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists for Jock Landale. 17-8-8 for Josh Giddey. 27-5 with 2 steals for Santi Aldama in that one. Germany with a 97-77 victory over Japan. France with a 78-66 victory over Brazil. Canada in their first game against Greece, an 86-77 victory there. And South Sudan beating Puerto Rico 90-79. That game happened on Sunday, as did the Team USA game on Sunday. Did any of those, you already mentioned Santi Aldama in Canada, but any thoughts, anything that's popped for you from those squads?
It was very interesting to kind of watch the France game in particular, as it felt like their best offense at times was their defense / Frank Ntilikina hitting pull-up threes.
Shout out Frank Ntilikina changing that game, dog. Continue. Hey,
he came in with a boost, gave a lot of energy. So I want to see how they progress and what the usage starts to look like. How do they use Wemby? I think that's been the one fun part about always FIBA and international play and Olympic play. Guys just get used differently. Like Evan Fournier. Evan Fournier in pick and roll, where he's just like, actually, Wemby, move. You come screen for me. I'm getting downhill and drawing fouls. Like, it's just different. Brazil, I felt like competed, and then the France defense just kind of ramped up, and there's nothing in the paint. We were keeping things in front. We're active. Makes it tough on you. The Canadian talent is fun. Some of the three-guard lineups they can throw out there, like you just look up, and like it's like Jamal Murray's coming off the bench, but it's like Jamal Murray, Andrew Nimhard, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and it's like, interesting. They can kind of compete and switch and drive and kick, and that's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Greece and Giannis, I didn't see the Spain game, but man, it was just Canada was like, hey Giannis, good to see you in the post. Here's help and a double.
No.
please throw it elsewhere. Well, I don't want to, I'm gonna score. Okay, please throw it elsewhere. You guys can't get things going. So it's just kind of the overall spirit's been fun to kind of see. And the point differential it's always been fun to kind of watch that factor in. And actually, we're going to keep shooting the ball here late because we can make this make sense. So just those are my kind of overall thoughts. I don't want to ramble too much.
Okay, I got you. I got you. I just want to say very quickly on the Greece front, like, one, shout out to Giannis just for representing and playing. But beyond that, you think about Giannis and how he's defended on the NBA side, and everyone's like, oh, we're going to try to build a wall in Milwaukee through different coaches that have tried to figure out ways to make sure that just can't happen. We're going to, you know, when Bud first got there, we're going to reconfigure the spacing, et cetera, and all this stuff. And then we get to international play, and teams are just like, actually, no. You have the ball at the top of the key. Here is three people, three and a possible standing here. If you're getting to the basket, you're going to have to work hard. And Giannis still gets to the rim or to the free throw line. And he has very impressive poster dunks in both of the games that Greece has played to this point. And it's just like, well, this is why Giannis is Giannis. But like just the reforming or the retooling of the quote unquote wall against Giannis defensively has been interesting to watch develop. Beyond that, the Wagner's just had all the fun against Japan. Also, Rui, want to give him a quick shout out just for ridiculous dunk he had in the first half of that game against Germany. I want to give him that one. Also, buddy, he let it fly in this game. And like it was also just kind of funny, especially after watching like the Team USA Japan game. It's like, oh, the Japan national teams are just getting the threes up. Like this is just what they're going to do. They're going to play fast. They're going to pressure you, and they are going to generate threes as best as they can. And if those do not fall, then it gets a little hazy for them offensively. And so watching Franz just kind of fill in gaps, Mo Wagner just dicing them up on the roll. Dennis Schroeder had 13 points, 12 assists, but like, again, as is the theme with Olympic play, ball pressure was very effective. His drives were very effective. Just kind of lived in the paint. I will say, like, watching him just flow into step back threes, I was just like, ah. And then I heard your voice in my head, Steve. So it's like, hey, to get this, you got to live with some of these. And I was like, well.
Yes.
If you're getting the drives in the defense, and I guess you got to have this step back three to the left with like 15 on the clock. I'm like, all right, well, do your thing, Dennis. But no, Dennis is just a. He's just really good in international play. Like, he's a good basketball player overall, obviously. But like in international play, this team just cannot keep him in front. So that's a fun bit. And then just to the France-Brazil game. As you already talked about Canada, Greece, so I don't want to hang there too long. But to the France-Brazil game. Marcelo Huertas, man. Welcome back. I just like watching him play. Him just sprinkling in like 18-foot floaters was fun. Here's a pick and roll. Here's a rescreen. I'm getting to the free throw line. Here's a floater. Because I ain't trying to deal with Wimby or insert big here.
Hey, and you know what? That man is, what is he, 41 now or something?
He's
like that?
Still cooking.
I feel like I've been watching that man cook for a very long time. So shout out to him.
I
raise my hand real quick?
Yeah, what's up?
Before you continue, it was very funny to kind of remind yourself again, this is the international game and the Olympics, and it's like Rudy Gobert is going to try and drive from the elbow, and it's going to be Bruno Caboclo who says, actually, I'm going to rip the ball from you.
Bruno,
and
that's when I was five. Like,
I was like, okay, yep, let's have some fun, you know?
Yeah, I was like, man, that was very neat. Also, just a broader Olympic basketball note. Dwayne Wade, Noah Eagle, I appreciate y'all. I've enjoyed the broadcast team.
Yes.
They have just been very good. And as I'm thinking about the France-Brazil game, and I think I ended up tweeting this as well, Dwayne Wade's like childlike joy just watching Victor Wembanyama, because he's watched him. He said this is the first time he's got to watch Wimby in person. And once Wimby decided either the second quarter or the third quarter, when Wimby was just like, actually, I'm just the best player on the court. Give me the ball. We are about to take this lead, because Brazil got out to a good start. And Dwayne Wade is just laughing on the broadcast. I was like, you know what? Yes, Dwayne, that was literally all of our experiences watching Wimby for the first time. Like, how on earth did he do that? Like him and Noah Eagle nearly doing the me and you thing to where they made like the Space Jam reference at the same time. And I was like, look at this chemistry, man. That's what I'm talking about. That's really cool stuff.
You know what the really cool part is? And shout out, they've done a tremendous job on the basketball coverage. One, chemistry. Two, they're having fun. Three, D-Wade is just being D-Wade. It's totally fine. You don't have to be right all the time. I want people to realize that. D-Wade be like, hey, I'm out here. I don't know what I'm doing. Cheryl Miller,
I'm having fun. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm having fun.
That's it. Key to life, man. Just go out there and be yourself. You don't have to be the biggest expert in the world. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Also, Nikias, it's rugby time. What else we got?
Oh, okay. My fault.
No, we're good. We're good. I'm just telling you. The Team USA is facing New Zealand. And hey, bud.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, I just wanted to give a quick shout. Ask Dwayne Wade. No, that brings me to the Cristiano Felicio point. To where, one, Dwayne was also surprised. New hair, huh? And then watching the Eagle kind of break up the story of Dwayne nearly having the triple-double in Chicago and Cristiano Felicio grabbing that rebound so he didn't get it.
Oh, Dwayne did not enjoy that callback.
He didn't like that one. He did not like that one. So it was deep watching Cristiano Felicio out there. Also, Nicholas Batum, just doing what he does. Hey, I will hit these timely baskets. I will get this timely deflection or this timely block. He pretty much sealed the game in the fourth quarter. 19 points, 5 boards, 2 steals for him. 19-9, 4 steals, 3 blocks for Wimby. Just put the stat line out there. But that was fun. And to close things out, just on the NBA news portion, so Steve can watch some rugby and I can continue this USC dynasty. Tyus Jones, you are a Phoenix Sun. A 1-year deal, $3.3 million, which I think is the minimum. Coming off of a career year in Washington as a full-time starter. 12 points, 54% on twos, career high. 41% for threes, career high. 7.3 assists, a career high. Only 1 turnover per game, which is absurd. 1.1 steals per game. Steve, how do we feel about the Tyus Jones fit in Phoenix?
Well, number one, no more the Phoenix Suns need a point guard. We talked about the Phoenix Suns needing a point guard for an entire year, and the answer has been Monty Morris and Tyus Jones. We have point guards, and they don't turn the ball over, so we're going to figure this thing out. No more. I don't want to hear it anymore. And if it doesn't work and teams go under or they just play drop against those two, I don't want to hear that they are not produced at a certain level. I just want y'all to know that. That's a preamble. If you're Phoenix, I mean, they've really hit the margins. When you're able to get a player like Tyus Jones at this time, you're a team that can only offer minimums, and you add that, hey, that's really good work.
That's good work.
And so you're going to have someone who can, at least at all times, we're going to have point guard play. We're going to have people who can play off ball, who can play on ball, can play off of the talent that they have with their other guys, who can set them up. So some of the off-ball actions that we talked about, we want to see more of. Those guys can start those, and then they can play off of it. So if it gets back to them, we can drive a closeout, we can keep the things going, or we can knock shots down, we can play out of it. You have two of those options. And again, I think it's just, it's interesting. Again, guys are betting on themselves to a degree. If Tyus Jones plays well and the Suns play well, now I'm back on the market. And you saw the impact I just had. Like, that's just kind of the way it goes. I think it's interesting. Like, you wouldn't think that – I don't think Tyus Jones, his talent level, would put him on the market at this stage. But with certain teams going in certain directions with young guards, do they need a Tyus Jones? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of recalibrating how you think about it. But these prove-it deals are going to be there. And I think that's one way that these – I don't want to say just contenders, but some of these quality teams can add talent as free agency rolls on. Because, hey, you like to hoop, we need a spot, let's get together. You kind of see Milwaukee, Phoenix be able to do that. So it's kind of the other side of the quote-unquote second apron era.
Yeah. I like that. Like, Tyus Jones is a good basketball player. I think just very quickly on the number front, I'll toss two things at you. One, for NBA.com, the Phoenix Suns were 25th in turnover rate. Adding Tyus Jones and Monty Morris should help with that. I would imagine two of the best assist turnover ratio guards in the league over recent years in your rotation should be helpful for keeping the ball turnover. And one thing I was quickly looking at on Second Spectrum, as you were mentioning the off-ball portion of the program for Phoenix, I wanted to look at what Devin Booker's numbers were coming off of screens. And so off-ball screens received per 100 possessions going back to the 2020-2021 season. About 27.5 per 100 in the 2020-21 season, about 18 per 100 the next year, 18 per 100 the year after that, last year down to 11.6 per 100 possessions. So just the volume going down. I think if you are naturally sliding Tyus Jones in, if he's going to be your starter, and I think Tyus released the statement to ESPN rather, about, you know, wanting to fit in with Bud and wanting to make an impact as the starting point guard. Naturally, Devin Booker will get to play off ball a little bit more. You can see more of those Devin Booker lifting up from the baseline, coming off a handoff, having some fun, et cetera. If we get that number back up to 15, 16, 17 per 100 possessions, do you get easier scoring opportunities for Devin Booker? If he's in more threatening positions as he's catching the ball on the move, are you forcing more rotations? And thus, now you can generate more of the catch and shoot threes that Phoenix, as I've talked about a lot on the podcast, three-point rate went up, but they're still not a super high-volume three-point shooting team. Does Tyus Jones help you bump that up, even if he's not the one taking a bunch of them? He did get more willing to shoot pull-up threes, like dating back to the Memphis days, but specifically in Washington, he certainly got more pull-up threes up. So he can also play a part in just upping the three-point volume for Phoenix. But at very least, like, as a play setter and making sure that Phoenix gets more possessions, he should help in that regard. I do kind of... Oh, go ahead.
Keep going. Sorry.
No, I do kind of wonder, like, one, just what the general rotation is going to look like. But two, one of my questions heading into the year for Phoenix last year was, I see all this offensive talent, et cetera. Like, what are they going to do scheme-wise defensively? And can they get their defense to... You know, I think I said something like 16th or 17th, if you're banking in the lead offense. And they ended up outperforming that defensively last year. As much as I enjoy Tyus Jones, and there have been moments throughout his career where he's been a competent point of attack defender, that was not the case last year. Now, granted, Washington's defense overall just wasn't good, so it's fair to put it all on him. But you are getting smaller in the guard room. And if he is going to start, I assume that means he's starting over Grayson Allen. And so, like, projected starting line will probably be something like Tyus Jones, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Yusuf Nurkic. I do wonder just what the defense is going to look like. If teams say, we're going to put Tyus Jones and Yusuf Nurkic in action, and Nurk's at the level, that's a lot of strain on KD on the back line. He's good enough to do it, but, like, how much do you want to put on his plate in that regard? So I do want to see better defense from Tyus to really make this work, because offensively, I think the fit is relatively clean, especially as the catch and shoot three ball start to fall from a little bit more last year as well. So he doesn't have to have the ball and dictate turns in the half court. Like, ideally, you can space him. Not going to be treated like a Booker or a Beal as a spacer. Teams will still dare him to shoot, but can knock down those shots. I do just generally keep an eye on what the defense is going to look like, because if it is just at that level, then what is the minute count going to look like for him? And then what is that going to look like for Monte Morris? And if Phoenix decides, actually, we're just better off with the shooting of Grayson Allen or the defense of Josh Okogie, et cetera, it's minimum signing, so it doesn't really hurt you, but it's also like, okay, what do we do exactly?
To counter, and this is the light counter, not a pushback or anything like that, you gave yourself optionality. Now, you are, to a degree, locking yourself into point guard, Nurkic, big three. I think we can all agree on that, because you're not going to play Tyus and Monte together off the bench exclusively. Like, you might mix that in, but you're not just going to do that all the time.
Yeah.
So I think there is a cost that goes with that, but there are circumstances when now you can lean on what you found last year without having that be the lineup. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes having Tyus and Monte will also help as you stagger, if you think about the combinations that they can have. Because I'm assuming there's always going to be someone out there, whether it's Beal, Booker, or KD. So now, okay, is it Monte Morris plus Grayson Royce, KD, and Mason Plumlee? Or, you know, Booker plus Allen, you know what I mean? So I think it kind of gives you more optionality with your bench units to kind of have a consistency of point guard. And also we can mix and match a little bit more than, hey, we also don't have a point guard with this as we mix and match, if that makes sense.
I don't know. Makes a ton of sense. So, and I appreciate the light pushback. All good. But those are just some of the questions I have coming in. And then also the natural one is, again, Tyus Jones coming off a career year shooting from three. If that dips, what exactly does that look like? The last 3 years for him, 39% on just under three attempts, 37% on four attempts. He's at 41% on four attempts. If this is just him and the sample is growing, then that's a positive. But if it is a dip, to your earlier point about seeing the unders and, again, helping off when he's spaced, how much is he helping the offense when he doesn't have the ball in his hands? Could then become a question. So those are some of the early thoughts. But overall, like, I think this is a positive addition, especially for that price. To where I feel like the early rumblings for Tyus was he's looking for a starting job. He's also looking for X amount of dollars. And so if you can get that kind of talent at the minimum, even if it is just for a year, like, I think you certainly take that if you're Phoenix. Like, big talking point last year was, hey, what exactly are they getting from this bench? They've done a really good job of bolstering that this offseason. So kudos to the Phoenix Suns down that front. As we talk more about bench guards, Reggie Jackson signing a one-year deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. Averaged 10 points, 4 assists in 22 minutes for Denver last year, 48% on twos, 36% from three, 81% from the line. In 23 starts last season, he averaged 15 points and 5 assists. He shot 44% from three as a starter. Things did kind of fall apart for him in the postseason, 3.5 points in roughly 10 minutes per game. Shot 35% from three, but 32% inside the arc. Steve, how do you feel about the Reggie Jackson fit in Philly?
Reggie Jackson's going to win them a playoff game. You already know the vibes.
Well, there you go.
You already know what I'm going to say.
I synced it with my own.
Yeah. But I think it's also the quality depth to be able to have Reggie as technically your third point guard. So you have Kyle Lowry and Reggie Jackson. You have optionality in case as the season goes on, people go down or you need a person for a certain amount of time or whatever. Kyle Lowry rests, Reggie comes in. That kind of I think that's just important to have. So now, bench-wise, you can have, like, a point guard you trust plus Eric Gordon. I think that helps overall. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind it. Two thumbs up for me.
There you go. I'm right there with you. And as, like, I guess kind of as a contrast to the Phoenix situation, as you noted, probably unlikely that you see Tyus and Monte play a ton together. I think you can go into some interesting three-guard lineups with that second unit with Philly. As you have Kyle Lowry, who certainly isn't afraid to defend up. Eric Gordon has been defending up for like the last 6 years at this point. And Reggie Jackson, not going to call him an elite defender, but he does have the super plus wingspan. So like in theory, you can just have those three guards out there. All three of them can drive, make things happen. You just kind of have get some interesting looks with the second unit if you do want to play them all at the same time. But to your point, it does just seem like more of an insurance deal. And so again, if you get that at the minimum, like that's pretty good stuff.
So fast forward, the month is November. Nekias Duncan has woken up at 6:46 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and he is breaking down clips of a Kyle Lowry, Reggie Jackson, Eric Gordon, KJ Martin, Andre Drummond unit that went plus 8 in 2 minutes.
Yes. Absolutely. And you know how it's going to happen. We're going to get a pull-up. Hey, I'll boogie from Reggie Jackson. Pull up three from Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry draws charge. KJ Martin corner three miss. Offensive rebound, Andre Drummond miss. Offensive rebound again, Andre Drummond put back and one. Makes the free throw. Timeout insert team. You just got your 8-0 run. We did it. And that was specifically for the sickos that are still listening towards the end of this pod. While we're on the sicko range, Orlando Robinson, a one-year deal to the Sacramento Kings. Averaged 3 points, three boards in roughly 11 minutes across his two seasons with the Miami Heat. 8 career starts, 7.6 boards, 9 total stocks, that steals plus blocks. Shot 50% from three. Don't ask me how many attempts he took. But Orlando Robinson, interesting depth piece for the Sacramento Kings in the center room. Did you have thoughts on Big Lando?
Can we study the Heat to Kings pipeline? Number.
Are you calling him Big KZ Apollo?
Out of respect for you, I will not do that today.
Okay.
Let me tell you. I think it's quality. I mean, to be able to have the potential of Orlando Robinson. And what's the difference between Orlando and Alex Lynn? Hey, man.
See, here's the pickle that you put me in, right? I can either let you have this or I will give you earnest answers in the differences between those two and reveal myself as even a bigger sicko and also upset you in the process. And we are an hour and 23 minutes into the podcast. So I'm not going to do that to you. I'll just say, hey, I hear you. Also, are the Kings just trying to do the Hassan thing in reverse? Like, you know, he was a King and then waves arms wildly, and he was out of the league. And Miami was like, hey, we'll give him a shot. And then 2K rating up, et cetera, et cetera. Are they trying to find a real backup center with Orlando Robinson? It'd be an interesting point. We'll see. Also, some fun stretches of play during summer league with the Rockets for Orlando Robinson. That's going to include my Orlando Robinson thoughts on this here podcast. Three other quick notes. For the Indiana Pacers in the welcome back section, a 3-year, $59 million extension for Andrew Nembhard. James Johnson also back. The Knicks and Tom Thibodeau agreeing to a 3-year extension. And Brent Berry going from front office to the bench, now joined the Suns as an assistant coach. Any of those news nuggets intrigue you?
Andrew Nembhard got paid. Salute to him. James Johnson, the enforcer, returns. The Arn Anderson of the Pacers will continue to be there.
The Arn Anderson is crazy.
You want to say something bad about James Johnson? You can put your name on that if you like.
Ah, I see.
Do we like the Tibbs extension?
He's been good for them. And the team very much molded in his image. They got a lot of upward mobility. They just made a big trade. Like, I understand the Knicks feeling good about him.
I like the synergy, though. You know? Mm-hmm. You've done well. We lean into you. We get you the roster you need. You help us here. It's just, you know, that's kind of how it should work. It doesn't always work out that way. But front office head coaching synergy is fun. Brent Berry got that itch. Hey, man. Salute to Brent Berry.
Yeah, yeah. He's been around basketball for a very long time. So, yeah. That should be fun. That should be fun. Just very quickly on the Nembhard portion. 10 points, 4 assists, and a steal in 47 starts last year. 57% on twos, 36% from three in that front. And in the playoffs, started all those games due to injury. And obviously just played well. But 15 points, 5.5 assists, 60% on twos, 48% from three. I like Andrew Nembhard. I like Andrew Nembhard. Really competes defensively. The drives, the amount of pull-ups that we saw from him in the postseason was a lot of fun. I just wonder, like, what kind of upside he has offensively with this group. It's clear that he can do a little bit more, and he showcased that in the postseason. Out of necessity, but he surely showcased, hey, I can just be a shot maker on top of like, the gap-filling stuff and the defense that he provides. So that 3-for-59 seems very reasonable. I guess my only surprise there would be, like, him taking that versus, hey, let's just extend this out. Hope we stay healthy and let's push this to like actual free agency. But get your money, young man. Any closing thoughts on anything basketball if we head out of here and let you watch rugby?
Well, it's 3 minutes left. Team USA is getting cut. Oh my God, it's over. Oh, gotta stop. Never mind. No, it's 12-5. It's the semis, Nikias. There's 3 minutes left. These games go quick. So now I'm chilling. Do you have any rants or things you want to get off? While I'm trying to hope that Team USA gets a stop here.
The spin move from the Ohio State running back is some of the glitchiest stuff that I have ever seen. And I don't know if that's okay. Other than that, ready to watch more basketball today. Obviously, Team USA playing Wednesday and Thursday, the men's and the women's side, respectively. So excited to watch more of them. I don't know how much NBA transaction news we're going to get. I don't know if we get another W trade during this break. I did see on the timeline, the Indiana Fever apparently had a practice either today or yesterday. And so seeing practice clips float down the timeline, I was like, huh. So all was there? Because ain't some of y'all on was that an optional practice? Was this like a workout that was just like clipped up and stuff and made it look fancy? I have more questions, but I did see a clip and things are apparently happening. So really curious to see what's happening on that front. Cause that seems like, hey, no, we just went to break. Like But anyway, basketball is awesome. I think that's where I landed. Thank you for listening to this episode go ahead.
Wait, no, wait a minute. Hold on.
Steve's doing some live research right now.
No. Hold on. I'm assuming that had to be optional, but. Let's take a look here real quick, Nikias.
Yeah, we got the back to work photos from the Fever account.
No, they're trying to win those first two games coming back.
I tell you what, I was like, hey, hold on, man. I thought y'all were just chilling for a little bit. But yeah. There you go. We'll see what the Fever look like post-Olympic/All-Star break. All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. We're having some fun discussions / sharing some funny tweets in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. You can watch along with us as we're talking hoop. Also, so much gaming content in the room right now. So much gaming content. The friends played Fall Guys last night, and buddy, did it get hectic in the day. Also, we have various members just playing each other in college football, 25, or just streaming their own dynasties or Road to Glories and stuff like that. So if you just want to vibe out with us, the link to the room is in the description. It is free to create your profile, no shenanigans whatsoever. We're eventually going to get a Dunker Dynasty going, doing only one star. So I think I think we got like 15 of the 30 slots filled up already. But it's going to be a good time. So come rock with us. Come have some fun with us.
It literally, come hang out with us. We are just in there for entirely too long, but it's just because we're playing video games.
Or watching wrestling.
Yeah, that's very, like, we just pop up and then it's like, oh, we're still here. And, but so just hang if you want to ask questions or anything like that. Team USA is down 24-5. Now, New Zealand has taken care of business.
Wasn't it just 12-5?
They have a huge predicament. Shout out to Tom. Anyways. Also, very quickly, you already done the outro and everything. I'm supposed to hit a quick hitter here. But I just pulled up the Indiana Fever video about the practice. One, yes. Christy Sides got a tan and said, "We working on defense." Because that whole highlight package is the Indiana Fever sliding on defense.
I respect that so much. I respect that so much. Why they sleeping, we working. I respect it. Winners work. Okay. We will catch y'all later in the week.
Defense. Get back in the gym. I got my whistle.